It's all fun and games until someone pops a vocal cord trying to imitate Nathan Queen on the Fish Golf Broadcast. On this episode of the Fish Golf Broadcast, I sat down with Ella Hansen. Ella, what you thinking about?
Whew. I'm thinking about snacks.
That's a good thing to be thinking about. Any in particular? Are you salty, sweet?
Salty. Pretty much. Pretty much all the time.
Is that your personality? Salty, not sweet?
I don't know. I wouldn't say that, but sometimes.
So you and I are both baseball fans. You can listen to Ella's AL preview from a couple weeks ago on the Fish Golf Broadcast. And you're a Mariners fan. How did that come about?
I was born and raised in the great state of Washington in the city of Seattle. Mm-hmm. And I have been a baseball fan my whole life. I feel like baseball is kind of like a familial thing where, like, if you grow up being a baseball fan, you'll be like a baseball fan or at least a baseball enjoyer for life. And if you didn't grow up in baseball, it's harder to kind of get into it. But I grew up playing baseball, watching baseball, and I was in utero at the 1995 Division Series game where
Edgar Martinez
at the double game. I was there, but I was yet to be born.
That's a pretty strong claim.
Yes,
and that was such a good time for Mariners fans. And then, like, right as you were potentially becoming conscious of sports, like, that would have been 2001, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep, I was, obviously, you had to kind of be a big Ichiro fan if you were a Seattle baseball fan in the early 2000s, and I was alive this time, but I was at the game where Ichiro broke the single-season hit record.
Amazing.
Which was pretty cool, and I still remember it barely, but I remember it. That was a pretty cool experience.
Can I tell you a story, and you can judge it sad, happy, neutral?
Yes.
All right. So in 2012, I was working for Olympic National Forest in Washington, and we had a trail crew of high school students. Mm-hmm. Some of them had been to the backcountry before, some hadn't, and they were going to spend about 5 days out there. So I helped pack them in, get them set up at camp, but then it was kind of my weekend during the week. And then on the fourth day they were there, I packed back in, you know, and I tried to bring something special for each of the kids who were there, you know, just to, like, make them know that people were still thinking about them.
Yeah.
Like a couple of their parents had sent cards, and one of the girls on that trail crew was a big baseball fan. Like, was just jabbering about, you know, how great they were. Like, Franklin Gutierrez was hot at that time. And while they were in the backcountry with no cell service or anything like that.
Oh no.
This is 2012. Do you know what happened? Ichiro got traded to the Yankees, and I had to break that news to her.
Oh my God. That is brutal. Wow. That's rough. That reminds me of, like, slightly more morbid. I mean, that is a sad story, but I coached my college ultimate team for a year. Mm-hmm. And one of my players was a really big Kobe fan, and I had to be the one to tell her that he died.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, this is rough. That's not good.
Yeah. Sports continue to happen even when we're in different places.
Yes.
So you came to disc golf from Ultimate. Can you talk a little bit about, less about how you got into it, but, like, what are the struggles that you still have ingrained somewhere in your subconscious from Ultimate?
Number one, like, seeing the fun throw and wanting to throw it, like, only that one, which nowadays tends to be like a spike hyzer or like a weird flex throw. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in Ultimate, I liked throwing fun throws, and a lot of the times I could get it back on defense, or, you know, it's not like you throw it and whatever happens, happens, and then it's over. In Ultimate, you know, you get a chance. If you throw a turnover or a bad throw or bad shot, you know, you can get it back. can't really do that in disc golf. So that's probably the number one. Form wise, throwing nose up forehands is the big thing, I think, if you're looking at like, that's like decision making versus form.
Right.
And I don't know, I mean, I miss having a team. I think having a team is a really unique experience, and it obviously can suck, but it also can be amazing, and having support of a bunch of people and supporting them is, yeah, like I said, very unique experience. And like, I definitely have like a great group of friends and people I like spending time with on tour playing disc golf, but it's just not quite the same as having a team.
No, definitely not. Like, your outcomes are your outcomes. Mm-hmm. And if you're having a bad day throwing, like, you can't just try harder on defense. You can't just like can't clear space for somebody else.
You got to own it.
That's tough. And I definitely identify with, you know, missing having a team where it's 25 people all going for the same goal and struggling through off season workouts and, you know, hoping you peak at the right time.
Yeah.
You've played at some really, really high levels of ultimate. And I'm interested, you talking about the fun throw, it seemed like you played in a college system where the fun throw and the fun team were very encouraged.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the cool things about my college program, I went to University of Oregon. Our team was called Fugue, and we really tried, at least when I was in college there, we tried to, rather than fitting our players to a system, we tried to kind of build a system around the players and the skill sets and, you know, being a, you know, like, not to toot my own horn, but I was one of, if not the best throwers in the women's division in college when I was playing, and being able to do that and having that flexibility definitely made it a lot more fun and also increased my skill level because I was given some of the freedom to do that. Now, that also came with like throwing a lot of turnovers that, you know, people didn't always love and my coaches didn't always love, but I didn't always love, but you know, I did get to throw a lot of creative throws, and like knowing that my teammates were looking for those kind of cuts and things made it a lot of fun.
So, you know, now that you're just doing disc golf, are you still trying to play ultimate? Like, do you do any winter leagues or?
I've played a little bit. I just played at Goaltee Nationals, which was fun. And our team kind of struggled. We had some injuries, but we're going to try to run it back next year. And I play some pickup play in my college alumni tournament. It's kind of a hard balance because, you know, if I were to play ultimate, I'd want to play at a pretty high level, and the commitment level required for that kind of, very strongly conflicts with the commitment level required for being a professional disc golfer out on tour. So
yeah, not to mention the like time overlap.
Yeah, exactly. It's like everything happens on the weekends. You know, if I were to play on a team, I would miss all the practices pretty much and most of the tournaments. So it's like, do you want me on your team? Probably not.
Yeah. You're very good. Are you good enough to be that tournament only player for the level of team you would want to play?
Right.
Probably not.
Yeah. I was lucky in 2021. I played with Nightlock team in the Bay Area, and it was kind of like coming out of COVID, they were kind of doing a little bit more of a low commitment thing, and they were fine with me not really being there. And I had a lot of fun, but I definitely, it's not very common for teams that are, you know, nationals quality, to have that level of commitment. And also it kind of does detract from the team. You know, if you want to learn a system, things like that, it, you know, you don't have all that time to do so.
Yeah, for sure. You're talking about your college team that's fitting the system to the identity of its players. It seems like that's a lot less common in club because there's more continuity year to year in who your top players are going to be.
More continuity and more skill, obviously, across the board. And
sure.
Like, you know, in college, it's a lot more common to see a team that has maybe 1 to 3 decent or good throwers and a lot of people who know how to catch the disc and throw it 5 yards to one of those 3 players.
Right. And there's almost an incentive in college to just funnel everything to your best players, mm-hmm. limit the playing time of your younger players, especially as the season kind of goes deep.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, you know, I think pretty much every year that I played, we took a player who had never played Ultimate before. Like they had been, you know, coming to our open practices and maybe had played for 2 to 3 months and learned some basic throws, but, you know, either had a background in soccer or basketball or maybe volleyball that allowed them to know how to catch and just have a sense of themselves on the field that made them be helpful to the team.
Yeah, for sure. Just being able to see the field like a soccer player or mm-hmm. point guard is so much more valuable to than like a little bit of throwing and catching.
Right. Right. Yeah. I'm curious. I actually have been, I'm trying to convince you, but talking to Paige Pierce and a couple other people about trying to maybe put together an ultimate team of disc golfers for Layout, which is a fun beach tournament in Huntington Beach in January. Mm-hmm. And I would be very curious how that goes, because I think a lot of disc golfers, especially on tour, some of them have like never played any other sports.
Right.
And I'm very curious how that would go.
Yeah, I think standler is the word you're looking for here.
Yes. Yes. Paige Pierce would be an excellent standler.
As you were growing up, who were your Frisbee crushes?
Man.
Like, you're in Seattle, so that's just a gold mine of opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, I had some, like, really amazing coaches. Man, who were my Frisbee crushes? You already asked me this, and my brain is just, like, not functioning. This might be a part you have to cut out, but let me think for a second.
Ain't cut nothing yet.
Okay, well, I'll just keep thinking out loud. I mean, well, okay. The best one is, you probably know her, Miranda Roth.
Of course.
Knowles. Mm-hmm. She was one of my coaches in my freshman year of high school. She was the head coach. And then she moved back to Atlanta, coached at Paideia School. Mm-hmm. And, but yeah, I remember, because I played Ultimate in middle school and then got to high school. I wasn't sure if I was going to play Ultimate or run track because my basketball coach was like, you should run track. And I'm very glad I chose to play Ultimate.
It worked out pretty good.
But I remember one of my older teammates who was a junior at the time, and we would kind of throw in the gym at like break and at lunch. And they put on a highlight tape, I think from 2008 UPA Club Nationals.
Is this the remix?
Yes.
Yes.
And Miranda, like, I mean, it's just an epic highlight video. Everybody should go watch it. But seeing Miranda just like flying around the field, and like all of my teammates were like, oh my God, that's our coach. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my God. It was, yeah. So I think Miranda probably is the number one Frisbee crush.
I'm a few years older than you. So there was, by the time you were developing as a Frisbee player, like there was ample Callahan videos and mm-hmm. full games and highlight reels. Mm-hmm. Like it was all I could do to find like maybe 1 or 2 finals games a year mm-hmm. in grainy Ulti Village content.
Oh my gosh. That's so good.
You have a pretty dope Callahan tape.
Yeah.
How did that come about? Like what was the aesthetic that you were seeking or that the videographer was seeking?
Yeah. Well, I actually edited it myself.
Oh, so I guess you got a first person answer for both of those things.
Yeah. I've, you know, kind of been into video for a bit, and I helped cut the footage for, my friend, Jesse Schaffner, mm-hmm. who lives in Nashville, her Callahan video, which was edited by your friend and my friend, Jay Clark. Mm-hmm. And I think it was that year. Yeah, 2016 was when Jesse was nominated for the Callahan. And we had, I think, 5 or 6 other seniors. And we had gotten Luke Johnson, who...
Yeah.
Hi, Luke. You're the best. who had filmed us for the whole season. And so we had footage of every single game. And we're like, we have to do something with this. And Luke had made us highlight videos from each tournament. But mm-hmm. this is... I just wanted to. So I made a highlight video for every single one of our seniors. And, you know, the team helped out, like, cutting, you know, marking out when
sure, sure.
you know, each person's highlight
trying to remember
was.
What play, yeah.
But that was my first, like, real foray into editing. So then I made Haley Walrus's the next year, mm-hmm. And then I made mine. And it was kind of stressful to make your own Callahan video, because there's a nice thing about, like, it's, you know, it's kind of similar to disc golf, honestly, where it's like, if you do something cool, you think it's really cool because you did it yourself.
Right.
But if it kind of sucks, you're just like, dang, I made that, like, that kind of sucks. But I don't know, I wanted it to, it's hard because you want it to showcase your personality, but, you know, you also want it to be engaging and fun and not too long. So I wanted to kind of show off, you know, that I'm not just a thrower and that I had other skills and good defender and make some good catches. And use some music that I like. I there was probably some other songs that I wanted to use, but were a little too out there because, you know, there's always kind of the norm for having a good Callahan video song. But yeah, it was really fun to put that together for myself.
Yeah, definitely. So I kind of think, and I'm not following Ultimate that closely now, I kind of feel like the Callahan video has phased out a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But do you feel like that experience has lent itself to you knowing how to promote yourself better as a disc golfer?
Yeah, I think so. And I think, like, knowing how to edit videos, it obviously tends to be a little more short form. And I've kind of thought about, like, what would a Callahan video for disc golf look like? Like, how could you...
You're not getting voted on.
It's right. Just like, but it's just like, how could you build, like, the coolest highlight video for somebody as a disc golfer? Mm-hmm. Which, like, I think would be kind of hard because, you know, we love disc golf, but it's not the most high-speed environment.
which makes it all the more bizarre that disc golf media has taken off, mm-hmm. you know, with round coverage mm-hmm. and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But Ultimate is very stagnant.
Right. Right. No, that is very interesting. And it's interesting to see, I think, in the past year or two, there are a lot more Ultimate, like, content creators who are starting to kind of build more of that following on YouTube and Instagram. Mm-hmm. But I think disc golf being on Instagram as, like, the main social media platform was really important for the growth of that video market and being able to, like, post highlights and things like that. Yeah. And I think Ultimate's kind of starting to get into that market a little bit more and getting those, like, short form clips rather than, like, the full on, you know, like, DVD from Ulti Village with, like, 40 minutes of highlights or whatever.
Right. I guess I'm amazed that Ultimate never really did transition to cutting games down to 35 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
It happened occasionally, mm-hmm. like Ulti World would post it behind a paywall, but, like, yeah. teams never did that as a standard.
Yeah. Yeah. We would do that, but, like, just for our own personal film, like, if we would film a game, like, you
it's
know,
to
if
break
I'm going
to
send it to the team and I have a 2-hour long file, I'm going to cut it down. But mm-hmm. yeah, I mean, that's like an interesting, yeah, because when you, like, clip out Ultimate highlights, like, those are exciting, and it's kind of in a similar vein to disc golf, where, like, you can get, like, a 10-second long clip that is really, you know, looks cool, is exciting, somebody threw it far and somebody caught it or whatever. But it definitely, it's kind of hard, I think, to tell the story of an Ultimate game in a short amount of time.
Yeah, the best you can do is, like, a condensed thing that shows the highlight plays happening.
Yeah.
But if you just show that, you're never going to see the, you know, three throws ahead that a defender
mm-hmm.
baited the under.
Mm-hmm.
Or that
mm-hmm.
the poacher saw the pattern
mm-hmm.
and jumped the lane.
Yeah. That was an interesting thing for me, too, when I was making my Callahan video, because I, like, one of the things I was good at in college was throwing, like, the hockey assist. So, like, the assist to the assist, which often would be, like, a break throw and then an easy continue into the end zone. And, like, that's like, harder to showcase because it's, like, a good skill, but it's not the flashiest thing. Or it's, like, okay, if you didn't catch it in the end zone, like, it's not that exciting, you know?
Yeah, and there have been some films that showcase a subtlety well, like somebody's ability to just shut down a dump defense space. But the vision to make somebody else's assist easy, like that, unless you're really, unless you're a coach, you don't understand how critical that is.
Yeah, and it's hard because, you know, as the internet evolves, like the shorter the clip, the more enticing it is. And so it's like, if you want to showcase that, you have to make it enticing in some way that is, that will draw in viewers, which can be hard, especially for like shutdown defense, stuff like that. It's like, okay, like if you're an ultimate player, you know how impressive it is, but it's not quite as obvious to the non-ultimate players.
Right. And in disc golf, the equivalent is like throwing your 200-foot upshot to the base of the basket instead of having to make a 28-footer.
Yeah, or, you know, just hitting a line really well, stuff like that. I feel like it doesn't look quite as impressive unless you have tried it yourself.
I'm Chandler Kramer, and I listen to the Fish Gall podcast while I watch Ella watch the Mariners lose.
I'm Raven Klein, and I listen to the Fish Golf broadcast while I watch Chandler watch Ella watch the Mariners lose.
If you like where this show is headed, stick around for part two. We'll never barrage you with 11 minutes of droning external ads to start the show. So please support the Fish Golf broadcast by visiting discgolfbra.com for hats and other apparel. Fish stamp discs are available at fishdiscgolf.com and daddydiscgolf.com. And you can save 10% on upperparkdiscgolf.com with the code Andrew10 on backpacks and other items.
My name is Stacey Ronsley, and I listen to the Fish Golf broadcast while I watch Raven watch Chandler watch Ella watch the Mariners lose.
I'm Robert Burridge, and I listen to the Fish Golf broadcast while I watch Stacey watch Raven watch Chandler watch Ella watch the Mariners lose.
And now, more lies and outrageous claims from our guest, met with calm reason by Fish. So let's talk about the most important part about ultimate that is not in disc golf. Spiking.
Yes, very, very important to ultimate, I think. I grew up with spiking being like very taboo, which is interesting. For those that don't know, spiking is, you know, celebrating after you score or throwing the disc down or kicking it or smashing it off your head or dumb things like that.
It's definitely a piece of flair.
Yes. Very important. Yeah, I grew up with being told that spiking was a bad thing. And then I went to a school and played for a team that was known for spiking. And I was like, oh my God, all these people must be terrible humans. And then I was like, wait a second, they're not. They're great people. They just also like to celebrate when they score.
Turns out I was the one living in a repressed household all along.
Yeah, exactly. Pretty much.
That's actually a little bit similar to what happened in the college women's basketball final.
Yes.
Where, like, maybe for the first time we saw some like genuine exuberance and trash talking and celebrating, and it just like stoked all kinds of controversy.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
You're pretty avid in following other sports, not just baseball and ultimate, as we've talked about, but can you sell us on other leagues, other teams, other players that everybody should be all in on?
I mean, on the women's basketball side, both college basketball honestly is going to be super exciting next year and the year after because of the addition of the COVID year. So there's a lot of players who are able to play a fifth year, and some, I think Caitlin Clark is like eligible for a sixth year. but it's just, you know, the skill level has gone up a lot. And then especially with the NIL deals, a lot of players are actually making sometimes more money more comfortably in college than they would be if they declare for the WNBA, because, you know, there's hundreds of D1 college teams, and there are 12 WNBA teams with 12 spots each. So there's 144 players in the league. It's very common to see first round draft picks in the WNBA not even make a roster by the beginning of the season.
That's so brutal.
Which is brutal. I mean, I could go on about how the WNBA needs to expand. But that being said, the level of skill in the WNBA is very high.
Because you're taking the 144 best players.
Best players, yes. Yes, absolutely. There's been some very interesting roster moves this past season, or past offseason. A lot of movement. New York and Las Vegas are going to be two kind of super teams, and it'll be very interesting to see how that pans out with the league. And yeah, I mean, the WNBA League Pass is like, less, it's like $100 or less for the whole season. Actually, I think it's like $40. So
you could probably find a coupon or a
sale
at some point.
If you want to try to get into women's basketball, that is an excellent way to do that.
And I assume your team has a Seattle affiliation?
Yes, I'm a big Seattle Storm fan. I have been a Storm fan since I was a kid. My dad brought me to their games, you know, when I was young, and we were actually at the Storm's first championship win in 2004.
Cool.
We were at the game, which was pretty cool. And I've been a fan ever since. I actually did an internship with them when I was in high school and got to, you know, work with some of the players, and that was also pretty fun. But yeah, the Storm just lost our two best players. Sue Bird retired last year, and Brianna Stewart just signed with New York in the offseason. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be a bit of a rebuilding year, but there's some good talent. It'll be exciting.
How many games do you get to watch while you're on the road, or in general throughout the year?
Yeah, I mean, I try to watch. If you find me like outside of disc golf rounds and stuff, there's a very high likelihood that I'm watching a sport of some kind, whether it's women's basketball, especially in the summer, WNBA, MLB, you know, all sorts of fun stuff. It's kind of tough. Like there's not a whole lot of overlap. I might go be able to make a couple games when I'm home in Seattle, in May and June. And then, the week of the Preserve, actually, the Storm are playing Minnesota. So
cool. So you'll take a 30-minute drive down the highway.
Yes, I'm gonna drag as many of my friends along to that game as I possibly can.
That's awesome. When I was just out of college, I had some college ultimate buddies who had gotten Atlanta Dream season tickets,
mm-hmm.
and they were like $12 a game.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
There is nothing like a live sporting event for like the fun and energy of it,
mm-hmm.
even if you have no rooting interest in the players.
Yeah. Yeah, and there are some, you know, if you are interested in getting into the WNBA, there are so many really good players you can just be a fan of, and there's excitement on every single team.
For sure. And so you brought up, you know, NIL deals that are actually making it possible for women to survive in the college women's basketball game.
Mm-hmm.
You're in the fortunate position of having negotiated a pretty good deal with Discmania.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about how you kind of, you know, popped onto the tour scene, and then what it was like being contacted by companies for prospective sponsorships?
Yeah. I got kind of lucky in a sense of, Zoe Andyke and Dustin Keegan kind of, we met each other in Eugene, and
mm-hmm.
they saw my potential and, like, you know, advocated on my behalf and some aspect with some sponsors. But I actually, Discmania normally does like a combine throughout the year,
right,
to find like local talent in different places. And they hadn't been able to in 2020 because of COVID. And so the end of 2020, beginning of 2021, they had like an open application for women to be sponsored by Discmania. So I actually applied to that. I was one of, I think, two people to get a sponsorship from that, and that was how I got into the sponsorship game for the first time. I had like an offer from another company. And so I was kind of trying to figure that out. And that was wild for me. Like I, you know, especially coming from Ultimate, I think there's a lot of people now like who have been playing disc golf for a while and kind of understand, like start with like more lower level sponsorships and mm-hmm. local sponsorships, things like that. So I was just like getting a major manufacturer sponsorship right out of the gate.
Really skipping some steps there.
Yeah. And then I re-signed in the winter of 2021. Mm-hmm. Have Schaefer Sports Agents or Sport. Yeah, I think that's what it's called. Schaefer. they are now my agent, and which is really a wild thing for me to have an agent. But that was actually super helpful for me and made the process so much easier and took a lot off of my mind. And
they're cheaper than Scott Boras too.
I think that's probably true. Yeah. I think that's probably true. That's like another really interesting thing that's happening in the disc golf world of getting a lot more agents. And I think that is creating a lot more parity between companies in terms of what they're offering. And, I think it kind of brings a link for both the companies and for the players and sort of understanding what the value of certain players are and where different players' values lie.
For sure. And it seems like you haven't really pushed your own social media the way that many others have. Like, you are being sponsored as a player first, not mm-hmm. a personality.
Mm-hmm.
That said, you do have your personality is doing just fine. Thank you.
I try.
So you will have the opportunity to go to Europe for the first time as a player this year.
Mm-hmm.
How long are you going to stay? What are you looking forward to? Is it like strictly business, or are you going to goof off too?
I think it's going to be mostly business. I'm trying to nail down exactly what I'm doing. I think I'm going to play both the DGPT Elite event, the PCS Open, and then European Open, obviously. That's the main draw. That's my, Discmania's flagship tournament. And
right.
So they want to have as many Discmania athletes there as possible. And I've never been to Scandinavia, and I've always wanted to go. So that's something I'm excited for. I don't think I'm going to travel too much. It's, it's kind of tough because you look at the schedule and you're like, oh, I have 2 weeks before my next tournament, but like after European Open, but you got to fly back. I got to get my van. I got to drive from wherever I parked my van to the next tournament. I got to adjust for, jet lag, things like that. And, I may end up spending a couple of days somewhere else on the way back, but I think it's mostly gonna be disc golf, honestly.
Well, that's kind of a shame, but that is the nature of how the disc golf pro tour is set up right now. Like, mm-hmm. you kind of have to play everything because it's so critical to get to the end of the season.
Yeah,
with a lot of points.
Yeah, I mean, and that tournament right after European Open is a playoff or. I don't know if it's playoff, but
it's a plus event.
It's a big event. Yeah. I think it's Ledgestone. Yeah. So it's an important one. I mean, I think, I've been to Europe a couple times before for Ultimate and for fun. But I think
just Ultimate and fun are not the same thing to you.
Well, I went twice, I think. Yeah. Twice for Ultimate, once for just a trip with my brother. And
semantically, like, I know how that sentence was constructed, so we can move on, but that's an entire sport you're talking.
Ultimate is fun, but it's like when I have to plan out 5 days of training or 1 week of training camp and a week of world championships.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say that I don't really get time to go do touristy things during that time.
Right, which is a lot the same as your involvement with You Play Disc Golf, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, like, you kind of don't get the luxury of having every single day to yourself when you're just preparing for a pro tour event, right?
Yeah, that's something I kind of have to remember is on my docket when I get to pro tour events. But I think UPlay is super fun for me. I love getting to teach kids and getting to just see the excitement that they have when they make their first putt. And we just get kids every time. We're like, how can I do this more? Like, you know, how can I find courses? How can I play? How can I watch the pros? Like, that's, you know, really cool for me. But I think it's interesting kind of knowing all the different players. I guess there's probably some people who just like show up to tournaments and have no other obligations, but like pretty much everybody has like something, whether it's commentary or vending or
dumb podcasts
with Andrew Fish or, you know, you play, whatever. I think, you know, there's a lot of different, you know, different commitments that people have outside of just playing disc golf that the fans don't necessarily see.
For sure. So I assume your, like, the contact you made with Dustin and Zoe is what got you into UPlay.
Yeah.
Why do you keep doing it?
That's a good question.
You kind of mentioned the excitement of that, but how many kids have you contacted at this point?
Man, yeah, this year alone, I probably have taught to, probably like 500 or more students so far this year.
And this is only the fourth Pro Tour event of the season.
Yeah, yeah, which is cool. I mean, it's great to, and like, those are just the students we taught, and each school we go to, we donate equipment to discs and baskets so they can continue playing, you know, during recess or during PE, whatever they want to do, which is cool. I have been into coaching and teaching for a long time. I taught Ultimate for, gosh, like 10 years. And the way I actually got connected with Dustin and Zoe is I was the executive director of a youth Ultimate nonprofit in Eugene, Oregon. And when COVID hit, we couldn't keep putting our Ultimate leagues on. And so
you had to pivot somehow.
I contacted Zoe because I was like, oh, there's this like youth disc golf nonprofit, and they also happen to be based in Eugene. Like, let me reach out. And Zoe and I had like a video call, and then she invited me out to her women's league like that week, and that's how I met Zoe.
Very fortuitous.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I think UPlay is one of those things where it's kind of, you think like, oh, I got to wake up early, go to this school and like yell at some kids. But just as soon as I'm there, like it's so much fun. Like, I don't know. I have so much fun teaching and just high-fiving kids and seeing the joy that they bring. And, you know, you fix one little thing about their grip and they throw it 50 feet further, mm-hmm. and they just get so hyped. And I think that kind of mirrors my excitement too of when I started playing disc golf, because I played Ultimate for so long and, you know, the furthest I could throw a disc was like 80 yards.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's 240 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a putter. I was given a putter for my first round. I think it was an AVR, and you know, I was throwing it on so much hyzer, so much nose up. It was atrocious. But as soon as I got like a full flight out of it, and I like threw it, you know, probably like 280 maybe or 300 feet, mm-hmm. and I was like, oh my god, like what? Like I could throw it so much further than an Ultrastar, and that was what hooked me, just wanting to throw frisbees as far as I could.
And now you get to live vicariously through mm-hmm. hundreds of children, like yep. doing the same thing.
Yep. And this year, or I think last year, we went to a school in Vermont. We went to a middle school, and we had taught at that district's elementary school the year before. Mm-hmm. And you could just tell, like, some of those kids that we taught in middle school were like super into disc golf. Like they knew what was going on. They, you know, you could tell that they had learned and that the year before and that they had stuck with it. And it's just cool to be able to kind of come back and see the impact of like, not just like, oh, we taught you, we gave you some stuff and we left, you know?
So let me just walk you down a quick path here. When you are 35, you have taught thousands of children who are now going to be taking your tour card.
Yes, that is very true.
This is just like bad planning on your part.
Yeah, well, I'll have my golden years and then I'll become their coach.
Yeah. So for for pro players or others who might not be as comfortable in the setting of teaching kids, what are some other ways that like pro disc golfers could or should give back to the local communities?
Mm-hmm. Local communities. Just if you can like honestly donate some, excuse me, old discs, usually mids and putters are better. Mm-hmm. If you, you know, I feel like most people just have like a box or shelf or two of old discs that you don't throw anymore. If you donate those to, you know, a school or somebody you know who might play disc golf, who's a teacher, things like that, or a basket. And if you don't know anybody, you can also donate them directly to Uplay. And we do distribute those to like schools and youth programs around the world and the country, I guess, country and world.
Good set theory here.
Yes. And just in general, like I think having a really open mind and being open to having new players in your community, whether they're youth players, whether they're women or just new people in general. I think that that makes a big difference.
If you enjoyed the show, you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at fish58320. And if you hated the show and want to yell at somebody about it, how about talk to Ella?
Yeah, you can yell at me on Twitter at bagelpowered or on Instagram at onethrowella.
A couple of excellent nicknames there. Ella, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks, Fish.
That's all for this episode of the Fish Golf Broadcast. But be sure to check out previous episodes and subscribe wherever fine podcasts are sold. Check out Fish Golf Broadcast hats and other apparel at discgolfbra.com and badger your friends until they listen too. Join us next time as I goad yet another guest into starting a fight with another touring player, campsite host, or toll booth attendant on the Fish Golf Broadcast.